We are going to pay attention to a text in John 13. It's the text that describes the Last Supper, the Passover Seder that Jesus had with his disciples, that is the basis of the Christian Eucharist. But in this version of the story, there is not a passing of the bread and the wine. There is a foot washing ritual, and so or action, and so that's what we'll be musing about. The theme in the village this week, this summer, is no longer strangers. And so the question I'm wondering about is how actions like foot washing break down barriers between people. Are there gestures which help people trust one another and be free to talk to one another that take down walls? We'll begin with the same prayer we used yesterday, and I will say it, and then I'll ask you to say it with me. Jesus is present. Hurrah, hurrah, thanks be to the Spirit. Jesus is present. Hurrah, hurrah, thanks be to the Spirit. Jesus is present. Hurrah, hurrah, thanks be to the Spirit. Next week I'll not be on the have Bible duty, but I will be doing assorted discussions of the different images of Jesus around. And the first one I'll do will be Monday, late morning, and it will be about the Jesus Seminar. Because there are so many different stories about Jesus, some scholars have engaged in a project called the Historical Jesus Project, and what they're trying to do is see if we can see things behind the Gospels about Jesus. And it's a fairly controversial project. Some of it has been going on for about 200 years, but one of the latest research teams really covenanted that they wouldn't do all this research if they couldn't get it in the paper and get people to at least know that it's going on. And so as a result of that, the last year or so, Jesus has made a lot of the newspapers, and he was on the front page of Newsweek and Time last Easter, and so there's a lot of discussion going on, and I want to get you into some of that discussion. Okay? Now the text is today I want to just jump into the text and the themes of the week will work themselves out. I'm basically have been one of the underlying themes is what is power? What is power? Is power over or controlling, or is power with and for? Is God over people or is God with people? What kind of energy and power break down walls? And today, what is a symbolic gesture? What kind of gestures change the way we look at things? They don't change everything. Maybe they don't change very much, but they introduce into our experience a whole other way of looking at something. Okay, I would like us to just go around and read sections of the text. We're going to read from John 1 through John 20. And would you read a couple of verses and then have your neighbor do the reading? If they wish, and if you don't wish, just pass it over to the next person. Okay.
John 13.
Yes, John 13, 1 through 20.
Now before the festival of the Passover, Jesus knew that his hour had come to depart from this world and go to the Father. Having loved his own who were in the world, he loved them to the end. The devil had already put into the heart of Judas, son of Simon Iscariot, to betray him. And during supper, Jesus, knowing that the Father had given all things into his hands, and that he had come from God and was going to God, got up from the table, took off his outer robe, and tied a towel around himself.
Then he poured water into a basin and began to wash the disciples' feet and to wipe them with the towel that was tied around him. He came to Simon Peter, who said to him, "Lord, are you going to wash my feet?" Jesus answered, "You do not know now what I am doing, but later you will understand." Peter said to him, "You will never wash my feet."
Jesus answered, "Unless I wash you, you will have no share with me." Simon Peter said to him, "Lord, not my feet only, but also my hands and my head." Jesus said to him, "One who has bathed does not need to wash except for the feet, but is entirely clean. And you are clean, though not all of you." For he knew who was to betray him. For this reason he said, "Not all of you are clean."
When he had finished washing their feet, he put on his clothes and returned to his place. "Do you understand what I have done to you?" he asked them. "You call me teacher and Lord, and rightly so, for that is what I am.
For I have set an example that you also should do as I have done to you. Verily, very truly, I tell you, servants are not greater than their master, nor are messengers greater than the one who sent them. If you know these things, you are blessed if you do them."
"I am not speaking of all of you. I know whom I have chosen, but it is to fulfill the scripture, 'The one who ate my bread has lifted his heel against me.' I tell you this now, before it occurs, so that when it does occur, you may believe that I am he. Very truly I tell you, whoever receives one whom I send receives me, and whoever receives me receives him who sent me."
We'll take a minute and you can read it once more to yourself and look for the tensions, look for the sparks, look for the gestures and leadings. What does the text say to you? What do you hear in this text?
I've got a question about with the feet. Is there something more than symbolic in the feet? That it was the feet just because in their habits, you go to somebody's house, they take off your sandals and wash your feet? Or was that a particularly dirty or distasteful job? I guess the part I can understand how he is, his master is also their servant, but is the feet something special about the feet when Peter says, "Well, then also the rest of me," and he says, "No, you don't need to because you're clean except for your feet." Is there something symbolic there? Is it just a distasteful part of the washing that is done?
I guess yes to all of the above. The peace that helps us visualize best is that dirty roads, dusty roads, sandals, feet are dirty. You come into the house, one of the servants washes your feet. Yes, cleaning up the ordinary dirt is in any stratified society, you let the people at the bottom of the pile do that. So now there, when we did the Mary story, there's the Mary anointing of feet. There's purification pots in the story at Cana of Galilee. And if you are in Muslim countries today, you will see how people wash hands and feet to prepare themselves for prayer. So it's hard not to think of feet having some symbolic, becoming the kind of pits, kind of becoming kind of the one of the dirty jobs that has to be done all the time, you know, that nobody wants to do, but you got to do it. And so that it's hard not to think that feet, because of the customs and life, not having some kind of significance. In Hebrew tradition, covering the feet is a euphemism for sexual intimacy. So there's also, so feet have echoes, you know. Let me put it this way. Feet usher you into a certain symbolic realm. Okay? I'm trying to hang on to some of the open-endedness of their culture and not make it too cut and dried. Okay?
I can picture Jesus carrying a towel around his waist.
Nice. It's like putting on an apron.
Well, we can see where Jesus Christ, again, God of the universe in human form, goes down and serves by washing the people's feet. And I guess there'd be a deeper meaning in it. Of course, salvation is only in Christ. And we need to have Christ serve us in this area. Otherwise, we are not clean if he does not save us. But I believe earlier the disciples were arguing about who's to be the greatest. And here Jesus comes, who had every right to be the greatest, and comes and washes their feet. Which is quite a contrast with the way we normally do things.
There's so many... you had so many things all tied together there, David. It boggles me. I think I woke up during the night, and one of the things that I was thinking about, all right, spirits in Jesus. Jesus has the presence of God. That means, in some sense, God's washing feet. Normally, we think of God causing thunderstorms, or so what is this like that this whole business of God hidden in human ordinariness? Luther has some wonderful Christmas sermons in which he talks about God being in a baby, and there's a lot of theology of the cross, which is about God present in the dark side of human experience. And this is a pretty kind of ordinary, down-home task.
It seems to me this is a whole lesson in humility. And suggest that we need to walk humbly. The line, servants are not greater than their master, nor messengers greater than the one who sent them. To me, that's what it speaks of, the humbleness of Jesus and the one to serve others.
And he really says quite, it's kind of a conundrum. You ought to wash one another's feet.
Yeah.
You ought to do it too. And in a way, it's pretty interesting. Sometimes I tease people that think they're taking all of the Bible literally. I don't think anybody takes all of the Bible literally. But sometimes I tease them and say, well, do you do foot washing at your church? And if they're a disciple of Christ, they say yes, but almost everybody else has to say no, we don't do foot washing. And I said, but it says you're supposed to do that. I had another good line. Bob Marshall, who was president of the United Lutheran Church in America, was saying that someone was asking him why he didn't take some verse literally, and he says, well, do you take verse literally, go sell all that you have and give to the poor? When you're ready to take that literally, then I'll be ready to take your verse literally. So he was trying to get people to think about the richness of language, the metaphorical character.
In my church, we have as part of the Holy Week, we do this washing.
We do too. I mean, we did it at the St. Olaf congregation, but
He is showing how human he was.
Yes. Yes, I think this is important. Because I think my experience is there are lots of people who don't know anything about Jesus. There are some people who have rich experience of Jesus, but most of us who have the rich experience of Jesus have tended to emphasize the presence of God in Jesus, the divinity of Jesus. And almost to the point that the humanness of Jesus is not visible. And for the people who do not live in a symbolic world, it is the humanness of Jesus that is going to be the point of contact, not the divinity of Jesus. And for those, also I would say, if you're going to get your hands dirty, it's going to be the humanity of Jesus that nudges you more than the divinity of Jesus.
Mm. You talked about the power issue, and I think this has a lot to say with his vision of what real power is. It says servants are not greater than their master. Well, that's I guess the opposite of what I was thinking. Well, let me rethink this. I was thinking that it was saying the opposite.
But verse 16, is that me?
It is.
Yeah. Because, there he's talking, I suppose, about how you should listen to what he has to say. But I guess we're going back.
He is reversing. The aphorism reverses. Mirror images the action, but it means the same thing.
Yeah, and I guess, you know, I always think that's the most, one of the really powerful messages of Christ is that the greatest power comes from serving. And I guess that's what I think is one of the symbolic things of this. And I think it's, the irony is, I think it even works in the human world. That there's a kind of a proverb like, it's unlimited what you can do if you don't care who gets the credit, things like that. I mean, sometimes serving, there is a power that comes from just not caring about power and serving. It's a more moral power.
And we've always thought this actually isn't just a theoretical thing. It actually works in the world. I mean, this example, and also the one where Jesus said, "Don't sit at the head of the table; sit at the head of the table, so that the person putting on the feast will tell you to move up the table instead of vice versa." You know, and I think that you look at people like Mother Teresa; everybody's going over there to see her and wants to participate in that. I mean, somebody like that really does have power; has more power probably than you know, in a lot of ways, than maybe something like the Pope, I think there is. It does work. I mean, when you look at history, you look at who the people were that really everyone remembers as making a difference in the world. There were people who oftentimes were servants.
You have two sides to this gesture. You have the ordinariness of it. You have the fact that it is a work that needs to be done, and somebody does it, and it catalyzes action, and so has some influence. This business of the person who's at the top of the pile becoming part of the group that's at the bottom of the pile. This is really a Marxist text. The teacher becoming. This is Jesus going into the kitchen and being a Martha instead of sitting there teaching Mary. So there's a kind of reversal. There's a very interesting reversal of the normal that is a specimen, I think, of a symbolic gesture that will get people to think. That will get people to think about something and highlight something. I've been thinking about our conversation. I was thinking about that during the night, about the conversation about the $100 limit on your campaign. I said, "Oh, that's a symbolic gesture. The news media didn't help you very much, but you were trying to do it to get people to think about campaign financing, and you didn't get any cooperation." But it is an action that surprises people, that people notice, that shows people that there's a different way of doing it, and you can't make people do it that way. But the fact that somebody has done it has changed the possibility, it makes it possible for it to happen again. Makes it...
With the foot washing again, when several people here mention how it's done in our churches, usually on Monday, Thursday, I think, and how we do that. Well, I know at our church, whenever that's been done, they tell the five or six people whose feet the pastor's going to wash. And I'll guarantee every one of them goes home and washes their feet and puts on new socks. And is one who has particularly smelly feet. I would do the same, and in a sense, we want to sanitize ourselves before we do it, because it is a distasteful thing when you got particularly smelly and dirty feet, and somebody's going to wash in such a clean setting. They're going to do this. It feels dirty, and we don't want to do it. I almost wonder if we might get more of the impression if the thing is that Christ is telling us, you know, I'm your servant. If we might do it more like whatever we feel is most distasteful, because perhaps washing feet isn't particularly distasteful for us, but maybe the boss coming in cleaning your home restrooms or changing the diapers, whatever you find a particularly distasteful function. Maybe that's an analogy, because when I wash my feet, it's in the shower, the rest of me is no dirtier, whatever. And because we wear shoes, we don't have the dusty roads as much. I don't know, is that a...
Well, what I hear you talking about, John, is of the importance of the gesture for the person. And if you are to break down the inhibitions, then you have to find the gesture that helps you. I had a friend who said once, It's always worthwhile to make a gesture in the direction of your fear. Make a gesture in the direction of your fear. Mm. So some of our bondage is inside of us, and then we need to find the barrier that we have to find the gate in. Okay. The interesting thing about this action is it has inside ramifications and it has outside ramifications, because it's a clear-cut example of a gesture towards an egalitarian way of looking at things, which wasn't really prevalent in the time and isn't very stable. Let's face it, that a sense of collaboration and equality constantly breaks down, even in a democratic society. And so this business of making gestures in the direction of commonality and gatheredness is really hard work, and I wonder if it wouldn't be good for us to do something like this, not as often as we do the Eucharist, but do it more often than we do in church, because it would notice, just before I forget, notice that in this Passover Seder story in John, there isn't the passing of the bread and wine. And some people read that as saying, well, that means that this is more metaphor, that they were doing the bread and the wine, but this is what it means. I'm kind of play with the idea that in the beginning there are different Jesus. There are different ways of doing Jesus gestures. And this community, what was striking for them when they remembered the last meal with Jesus, what was striking for them was this sense of equality and this sense of exhibiting how to love one another and how to take care of one another. So that was the high point of their action.
I think it shows a great, like, a respect for one another too. My boyfriend and I washed his family's feet and did that in his house. Mm. It was him, but I, you know, mainly him being the servant and me just helping with everything, but it was just showing a respect and a love for one another within the family.
One of my sons did it at his wedding. Okay. The two people washed each other's feet. It was also a wedding where there was a husband and wife clergy team, and the wife was great with child. She was about to be delivered. And so it was a very fertile wedding ceremony.
One of the things that why this might be useful, but then maybe it's too think of how we go beyond it in our society. I think it's really tough in our society to break down barriers between the different strata in our society. And you just, there's so many subtle ways. Like, I think about our church makes meals for the Catholic worker community in that has three houses in their town. Very seldom do people stay and share the meal. They deliver it, and they don't stay and eat. And we've done this for a number of years, and we try to stay, and it's amazing how seldom we stay because of our schedule. You know, there'll be music lessons, there'll be, but there's a whole different feeling about staying and eating the meal with the homeless men than there is with just delivering it. I mean, it's the teaching for us. Same way, the way, I just think that this, that the whole, in our society, it's tremendously, I think, who in our churches does more this kind of work for each other? Who are the people that work in the kitchen? Quite often, it isn't the same people who serve on the boards and the committees, you know. And I think it's very subtle in our society how we aren't real comfortable going outside the tasks that we sort of, that are most comfortable to our level of society. And
it's risk-taking.
Mm-hmm. And it's kind of like a constant thing to think about, I think, is how, if you think about where you live your life, it's usually in a...
American society has become even more so in some ways. The suburb, the invention of the suburb, keeps people, segregates people economically so that they don't basically live with people who are at different economic levels. If you take the subway in Chicago, you see the back side of all kinds of houses. If you take the IC, you don't. If you drive in your car, you don't. There, we have all sorts of ways. I think, you know, there's no question that being a college professor is about as elitist as you can get.
It really, but it's.
I have lived my life totally segregated from, by my work, from people, from many kinds of people. If I hadn't grown up in a neighborhood, if I didn't go to a church that was a mixture of people of all different kinds. The other example I think of is you know, my son Pierre has been in the South Bronx, and he's coming back now. I think the difficulty of that task has finally gotten to him, but his ordination, it was very interesting. His ordination was at a church just before they had the meal for homeless men. So the ordination reception was to participate in the meal for the homeless men in the basement of the church. And he has lived in a community now for 5 years where there just are all sorts of needs, and it's pretty low class. So I think the revolutionary character, and I don't think, my hunch is that stratification is a normal process. It's something we have to do to get our work done and to make the world work. And so to make all these complicated systems work, so that it's something they're always, I think Mao's term was, what is it, continuous revolution, or what was Mao's, the notion that you have to keep having the revolution over and over again. There's something about Jesus that is revolutionary. And it's the radicalness of Jesus was there, was what initiated the movement. And yet once the Christian church gets big and settled and established, the revolutionary character of this disappears. And so some people in the community, I think, are called to kind of continuing gestures.
And the liberation theology movement, of course, vests certain, well, correct me because I'm not real, but the sense that there are insights that come from the oppressed and from the, in some ways, that's another.
Well, one of the basic propositions of liberation theology is that God has a preference of the poor, for the poor, and in fact, the rich need to be with the poor, otherwise they will not be liberated from riches. That in fact, did any of you see this wonderful production of Fences at the Guthrie in Minneapolis? It's August Wilson play, and the story is about this pig. I mean, the symbol in this story is about this picket fence. He's a black playwright, and that's getting built. And there's a line which says some people build fences to keep people out, and some people build fences to keep people in. And the truth is that you build fences because you're afraid of what's out there, but the fences end up keeping you inside. So that in fact, the poor are more free to go any place in the world because they know the world is dangerous and they have nothing to lose than the rich. The rich have to always be behind fences because they are afraid that somebody will take what they have. And so, this whole business of the funny function of fences, that this whole business of having to constantly change your mind, what's clean and unclean? Got anything that? See, another thing about this foot washing, and now we've been talking about the revolution, you know, the kind of way in which somebody at the top of the pile does something that normally somebody at the bottom of the pile does. But it's also a purification. You wash feet to begin with because the feet are dirty and you do, and unclean, and you try to get them clean. So what's this clean and unclean bit? And then Peter makes a big deal about this. You know, you're not going to wash my feet. And you wash me all over. And Jesus says, oh no, we just need to wash a little piece of you.
Reminds me of a poem by Edward Markham that goes, a short poem that goes like this. He drew a circle to shut me out. Heretic, rebel, a thing to flout. But love and I had the wit to win. We drew a circle that took him in.
there's another story. It's about it was a town. There was one Jew in it, and there was the rest were Christians, and the one Jewish family, and the man died. And the church wouldn't let the man be buried in the sanctified ground. And so he was buried right next to the cemetery. And that night, the villagers came and moved the fence on the cemetery to include the Jew.
I don't know where it read, but somebody had written about how, what if Christ was alive today, and one part of it was, would he join the local country club, or would the Jewish country club, this is 20 years ago, would the Jewish country club not accept him because he was a Christian, and would the Christian country club not accept him because he was Jewish?
Yeah.
Well, that's an interesting story because it gives you some clue to the complexity of the John congregation. I think you can explain the exclusiveness and the kind of hostility of the John community in terms of its exclusion from the synagogue. And so they were Jews. They weren't they were Jews who were following Jesus, and yet they weren't the right kind, and so they were really experiencing rejection. What's clean? How do you make sense of clean and unclean? What's clean and dirty?
We really decide what's clean and dirty culturally, I think. It's interesting, I just finished a book about the European gypsies, and people, the big label put on the European gypsies is that they're very dirty people, that they have messy yards, and yet when you read about them, they have a very complex purification ethic. And there's many things that we do that they think are grossly dirty because they cross their line. They have clean and dirty. The inside is clean and you don't bring things inside you from the outside. So like getting a shot is the worst kind of defilement because you're going to the inside with something. So it was just fascinating because it's an entirely different concept of what clean and dirty and how you keep things separate.
Every culture has taboos. Every culture makes the distinction, but you're quite right that where the distinction is different from one culture to another. That's what makes this term difficult, because we don't have the same places for clean and unclean as they did, so it's very difficult to understand their sense of the significance or symbolic meaning of certain actions. The one that I think of, actually, my best experience of clean and dirty was being on dish team. You're either clean or you're dirty, if you're dirty, it doesn't mean that you're full of oil and paint and everything. It means that you're got little pieces of garbage around and you're messing around with the dirty plates. And to get clean, to get clean when I went to dish team, all I had to do was wash my hands. Uh-huh. I washed my hands and then I was clean.
It's a little bit like an operating room back there. There's a line you have to cross.
There's a line you have to cross, and once you're sterile, you're in a different realm. In other words, it gives us some clue to how certain actions put us in a certain realm of things, so that we can begin to understand to be, for example, to be in Christ didn't mean that you were perfect. It meant you were in the realm of Christ experience, in the realm of Christ process. And this sense of, we're so conscious of being individuals, that this sense of being in some psychic area, some perceptual world, a perceptual world where things look a certain way.
I think a lot of the things that we brand as unclean or people that we marginated, people that we're actually kind of afraid of. I was thinking about that when Sharon and Alan put on their thing yesterday. One of the real gifts of them being in the community is to make a lot of people who haven't been around people with disabilities realize that you can break down those barriers and you can take away the fear. that you have of talking to somebody like Sharon. I noticed Alan's t-shirt the other day. He had a t-shirt on it. There's a big long paragraph on the back, but the gist of it was that disabilities aren't an internal problem. They're a relationship problem. And I think that's really true. Once you get the relationship, you get on a level playing field relationship-wise, the disability gets to be a non-issue almost.
Yeah.
And I think that's true of anybody who we look at as unclean. Mm-hmm. It's a relationship issue.
Mm-hmm. I'm trying to... That's why what I hear you saying is the uncleanness is how we look at it. That's why a certain gesture can make everybody clean. Because you have changed.
You've changed.
You've changed.
But the person we think is unclean, there's nothing innately unclean.
There's nothing innately unclean, so when the action which changes the perceptual field happens, then the person is clean. You don't need to wash the whole body. All you need is to wash the feet. I think another very, very important thing that you said was, yes, we do project fear. And the places we are most likely to project fear is the people we understand the least. And whether it's with disability, or whether it's with Jews, or whether it's with Muslims, or whether it's with gays, or whatever, when you are afraid, you are going to look for the person that's different, and the person whose life you don't understand, and that's the person that becomes the symbol of your suspicion and anxiety. And one
fear
of the
is not.
What?
Fear is not. The unknown.
We are afraid of the unknown. You got it. There are two things. We are afraid of the unknown personally, but some individual fears get institutionalized in the culture, and some institutional fears don't. Most of us have some kind of limitation or strangeness, but they don't show. So there are only certain people in the culture whose differences are not accommodated. You know, I grew up and there were no breaks in the sidewalk, you know? There were no recognition that anybody needed not to step down. And now, all over our town, you can walk down to the street rather than step down to the street. And I like that. I'm old, it's tiring. I like being able to walk down but it's funny, we never saw that. There was something in, so it really interests me how somebody who has a cultural difference, who is different than the majority, who's a minority, somebody who is a minority, when they speak up and get people to change something, they make the world better for everybody. They make the world better for everybody because they get us to think about how we build things and how we make things and how we act. And what kind of gestures are important now?
Sight and disabilities sometimes are more graceful than visible ones.
Hidden disabilities can be more hurtful than visible ones.
I've thought a lot about that, because one of the disabilities that is very hard for anybody to see is when people can't hear. And what's so hesitant in school, you know, if you were in my class, I would right away see what you could do and what you couldn't do, and you would talk to me and I would talk to you, and we would figure out how to do it. But if somebody doesn't hear, they don't know what I've said, and I don't know that they don't hear. So they don't come and talk to me, and I don't go and talk to them, because it's hidden. That's really very important. And I was very touched last night by one of the prayers that prayed for people who live in the darkness of depression. Because that's very hidden. Nobody sees it. And it's beginning to come out of the closet now. But it's still very hidden, and people don't talk about it. And gestures that break down walls. Gestures that break down walls.
Lots of people in it.
Yes, lots of people. I would like to wash 1 foot. Do I have a volunteer? Anybody want a foot washed? Hey, John, you got smelly feet. Let me wash one of yours.
Which one should I have washed?
Well, I'm not going to make all the decisions.
Nobody down there wants to, huh?
Doesn't look like it. Well, we don't have to wash them. Maybe we'll just... Shall we just leave it incomplete? You can figure out what to wash. Well, go wash somebody's feet. The command of Jesus is to go thou and do likewise. So, good luck.